The Daily Connect Podcast.
Yes, it is the Daily Connect Podcast for Monday, the 1st of October, 2018. It's nearly Christmas. Oh, I do love saying that in the show, and I get so much hate for it. I can't think why. Coming up, we are going to meet one of the hairy bikers. Dave Myers joins us to talk about why he thinks getting an eye test is important. He's got some personal experience of this. We also hear from Nick, who tells us about getting on a plane with his guide dog Oscar and the fun and games that went along with that. And we catch up with Una Mulgrew. She is one of the RNIB Connect facilitators for RNIB Connect. Brilliant job that she does. She tells us about some upcoming events in Northern Ireland. And if that's not enough for you, we're going to meet Roland Myers, who tells us all about some new ways to get access to your cash. You might think using a cash machine is impossible when you're blind. Well, Roland Myers is going to tell you otherwise. But first, we talk about audio description. It's a subject close to my heart. Something that drives me insane is sitting down to enjoy a new TV show or a series or a film or whatever, and then finding out it doesn't have audio description. Now, there are lots of TV shows out there with audio description now, but the big problem is getting access to that content on demand. So say on iPlayer or Netflix or Amazon Prime. Well, we've been putting that question to you this week, and we've had your opinions on the wider question about audio description and what the quality of it is like, and also your experience of using it on demand.
Hey, yeah, it's really, really important. And I think the more you have AD, I think actually the more you want it and want to watch programmes with it. So, I don't know, I feel that if something hasn't got AD on it, I, you know, quite likely might not watch it. But I was really impressed the other day. I think we were on Challenge or something, and Catchphrase had AD. And when I never understood what the game show Catchphrase was all about. I never even really understood what you did. I would always zone it out because I couldn't do it. But they had all the words and stuff on there, and it was amazing actually being able to be, you know, there was something quite spectacular about, you know, it's a small thing, but it was really good. But it would be fantastic if On Demand had AD. I'd really, really like to see that happen.
I'm kind of surprised that audio description seems to be considered as an afterthought, because it's essential, especially for me. Well, especially for anyone who watches films or, you know, what likes to watch TV. I don't watch a lot of TV. I binge watch some TV shows, but mostly films. And I'll have to say, without audio description, I wouldn't have been able to enjoy them. Without audio description, I probably wouldn't have been able to finish my course. I studied creative writing, and one of the modules on it was screenwriting. And because of audio description, I was able to pass that course. Because I incorporated audio, you know, the audio description text script into how I was to write a film script or a TV show. And I don't know how much to stress this, but audio description is like a part of a film. It's as if it's inseparable. It's not, oh, audio description and film. It's their one, as far as I'm concerned. So it's blended so much in the background, and it's given so much information that I just feel like both can't be inseparable.
I've moved away from TV, and the most often way I listen to TV now is with the BBC iPlayer app. Of course, tapping on the audio descriptions part in the menu. That's a fantastic feature. I'm hoping that Sky are going to catch up someday, because I do pay for that, but I really don't think they're anywhere near as good.
It's absolutely vital. I'll give you one example. It wasn't on the telly, though. I went to the cinema to watch Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, I think. It's one of the Harry Potter-type films. That film would have been totally, for me, I just wouldn't have been able to follow it, right from almost the word go. It's so, so lively, and there's so much going on. You would have got plenty of noise and stuff, but it was, you know, imperative with that film anyway that audio description was there. And I have to say, the audio description was very good. I couldn't say very much for the comfort of the headset, but, you know, you can't have it all, mate.
Pipeline. Joseph Elliott
Bruin. On the audio description front, I can't add much more than what everybody else has said. For me, it is the difference between enjoying TV with the family and kind of zoning out and starting to play with my iPod or iPhone. And not paying any attention to TV whatsoever. So it's very important, as you can well imagine. And the idea of being able to pull it down with catch-up or on-demand would be absolutely fantastic. I missed a few Red Dwarf episodes on the telly, which is audio-described, and then I had to go and flick the catch-up to actually watch it, and there was no audio description with that, and just wasn't the same TV program anymore. It just, you know, it wasn't as enjoyable without it. In fact, I didn't watch it all because I didn't have a clue what was going on half the time. So, yeah, I basically, when I use my Sky Plus app to look for, you know, what I'm going to watch, I check whether it has AD or it doesn't have AD, and that's my deciding factor on whether I watch the program or don't watch the program. So it's extremely important for me.
I am exactly the same. It makes the difference between watching the programme and not watching the programme. Simple as that. I could miss some brilliant dramas over the years because they're not audio-described or I'm not able to get access to them. Drives me insane. Tell us your thoughts on this, radio@rnib.org.uk. The Daily Connect poll is also live as well on Twitter and on Facebook. And that is our question this week. How easy is it for you to access audio-described content on TV, on film, and at the cinema as well? It doesn't just have to stay on the TV. So do tell us your thoughts. We'd love to get them in for the Daily Connect poll, which is live right now on Twitter. You'll find us at RNIB Radio, or you'll also find the poll on Facebook. Search for RNIB Connect Radio. And while you're there, give us a like. That's what they tell me to tell you. Give us a like. Yeah, so if you wouldn't mind.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now it's time to talk about guide dogs. Yes, those fluffy animals, and it's great to talk about them. This time around, a bit of a different conversation. This is about a guy and his dog getting on a plane and the challenges that it ensues. We're going to speak now to Nick. Welcome to the Daily Connect.
Hello, nice to speak to you, Steve.
And you, Nick. So we're on because it is pause for thought, or opportunity to talk about those lovely guide dogs that I do love talking about here on the programme. First of all, what's your guide dog's name?
He's called Oscar, and he's an 8-year-old lab retriever cross.
Oh, gorgeous. Right, okay, I'm very jealous. as I've been telling anybody who will listen to me, Nick, I am on the waiting list at the moment. I think I'll probably be another 10 years yet. I don't know, but...
Oh, dear.
But, you know, I'll feel like 10 years, I'm sure. It probably won't be, but I can't wait now. I'm really getting excited about it. And talking to people like yourself with guide dogs, it just it makes it all the more exciting, which is great. But the reason we were wanting to talk to you is because you've had a really good experience with an airline that you wanted to share with us.
Uh-huh, yeah, that's right. It's just about when I took Oscar on a flight from Edinburgh down to Birmingham, and just about my experience that I had with Flybe.
Okay, so what happened then? Where were you going?
I was going down to Birmingham. It was for a work conference, and we decided to fly down rather than getting the train.
And had you ever done that before? Ever flown with a guide dog before?
I had, yeah, just a few weeks beforehand, so I did have a little bit of experience, but I must admit the first time flying with Oscar was absolutely terrifying.
Oh, really? In what way?
Well, I suppose it's because there's so much to think about when you're flying anyway, and flying is quite stressful, trying to get through the security. I always have to go and get a bottle of water and some sweets and everything as well, and then trying to orientate where you're going and everything. So it's quite stressful anyway. But I wasn't too sure how Oscar was going to react to the plane. I thought that he might be a little bit nervous. So it was quite a terrifying time, but actually just completely took us all in his stride and it was absolutely fine.
Yeah, they tend to do better than we do, don't they?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I mean, halfway through the flight, he just put his head down and started snoring. So it was like he was on a bus or something. He was fine.
How long have you had Oscar?
I've had Oscar for 6 years now.
Right, okay. So this was the first time you were flying with them. That's amazing. So you decided to do it, but, you know, I guess when you therefore went ahead to get a guide dog, did you specify that you might be flying at that point? Was that something that guide dogs knew about?
No, they didn't. They knew that I would be using train and bus and tram, that type of thing, but I didn't actually have any intention of flying with them.
But now you can, which is fantastic, obviously. So you flew down, as you say, to Birmingham on the Flybe flight, and you said you got such a really great welcome and a really great experience. Tell us about that.
Oh, they were absolutely excellent. They actually allowed us to get onto the plane first, just so that we were able to get seated without having lots of other people around, and it just gave a bit of time for Oscar to get settled. And then after they did the safety demonstration, they actually came over to me and talked us through it separately and even gave us a chance to have a look and a feel of the life jacket as well. All the way through the flight, they kept coming over to just check that everything was all right. They were. I couldn't have wished for a better experience regarding sort of a survival kit, as it were, that I call it, for going on a plane with a guide dog. I didn't really have very much idea of anything that I would need to take with me for on the plane with Oscar, so I now have my trusty survival kit at hand for next time I go flying. So that's Oscar's Assistance Dogs UK booklet, which is a little yellow ID book that you get when you qualify with your dog, because they always ask to say that at check-in. I've also got some little dog treats and bits of carrot for Oscar, because when he's going up in the air, it's like us wherever he is pop, so it helps for him to be able to chew something as well, and also a car harness that attaches to the seat belt on the plane as well.
That's amazing. So loads of stuff in there. Did you get the impression they were more interested in Oscar than you?
I think they were slightly, although he did decide that he wanted to stick his head out into the aisle at one point when the snack trolley came along. And when they opened one of the drawers to get something out, he was eyeing everything up that was in there. So I think he brought it on himself, really.
It sounds like it must, in some ways, after that, you know, that must have made you feel a lot more relaxed. I mean, you know, you said the first time was pretty unnerving, even though nothing really happened on the first flight just that few weeks ago. It was just the feeling that something was going to go wrong. There was, you know, because it's an added pressure when you travel. This was kind of why I was never really sure if I wanted a guide dog or not, because I thought it's something else I need to think about. And like you say, traveling, I much prefer train to plane, without a doubt. And because I just like, you get on and you go and that's it. But with a plane, there's all this process you have to go through. Do you use assistance?
I have used it in the past at a couple of other airports when I didn't have Oscar. I used it at Manchester, Keflavik, which is in Iceland, and also down in London as well. And I found the assistants to be really, really good. They offered a sighted guide. They were describing the airport and where we were going. And nothing was really too much trouble for them. And they also helped me up the steps onto the plane. And then when I got to the other end, I had to wait until everybody else had got off. And then the assistants came to fetch me. So, no, the airport assistance that I've had at other airports has been really, really good.
I started using the assistance only because once I got on the wrong plane. Sometimes you come out and you have to go outside to get to the plane. And I obviously took the wrong route and just headed off and ended up on a plane bound for Germany.
Because you didn't end up in Germany, did you?
No, I didn't, thank goodness. But it was because everybody was speaking German on the plane. I thought, this doesn't feel right. Something's wrong here. And thankfully, I found the right plane. But it can be unnerving doing the travelling. But it sounds like you had a good experience. And well done, Flybe.
Oh yeah, definitely. They were absolutely fantastic. I would recommend them to anybody who's got an assistance dog to fly with them. Even the other passengers as well were just very, very kind. Somebody even helped us put my bag in the overhead locker. Definitely a really good experience.
Brilliant. Nick, thank you so much for coming on and telling us your story.
Oh, lovely. Thank you very much.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Now, do you want access to your cash? Well, of course you do. You want access to your cash. But getting access to it can be rather tricky if you're blind or partially sighted. The good news is there are some accessible options out there when it comes to cash machines. You might not be aware about it, but and I will say it's not widely advertised, but hey, it's something that is more out there than it was, say, 2 years ago when the campaign for more talking cash machines started by RNIB. Let's now join Roland Myers with more details.
It's surprisingly difficult to know exactly how many talking cash machines or ATMs there are in Great Britain, because the banks and building societies that provide them don't have to say. But RNIB reckons it could be somewhere between a quarter and a half of the 70,000 cash dispensing machines that'll give spoken instructions. A blind or partially sighted user needs to plug their own headphones or earpiece into the device to hear spoken instructions about which key to press and to get other information. One way to tell whether a machine can talk could be to find the mini jack socket by touch, but be warned, some ATMs will have the socket, but they still won't have the wherewithal to offer spoken instructions, and they don't all have the earphone socket in the same place. Ultimately, the only way to be sure is to plug in your headphones or earpiece, insert your card, and listen. To find out how they actually work and to get some advice about the practicalities of using them securely, we spoke to Hugh Huddy, who's blind himself, works for RNIB, and is a regular user of talking ATMs. We first asked Hugh whether all talking cash machines give exactly the same speech feedback, irrespective of which bank or building society is running the machine.
They have slightly different ways of giving speech feedback, but because it's been designed by users, by the cash machine companies that have manufactured them to be user-friendly as much as possible, the differences are not that major. They'll be something that you can get the hang of, and everybody should be able to just plug in, listen to the instructions, and use the machine for the first time. You shouldn't need anyone to help.
So the kind of physical layout of the buttons that you need to push, even if you're getting the audio instruction in your earbud or earpiece, headphones, whatever, they are the same, are they? Is it rows of buttons, and can you find those rows of buttons easily?
The buttons generally are that kind of standard telephone pad layout. Obviously much bigger buttons, not like a telephone, but much bigger. But the layout is essentially the same. And most of the machines now have tactile button tops down the right-hand side for enter, which is a circle, backspace is a little line, and return card, I think, is often an X. So there are consistent tactile markers on many of these cash machines. And the 5 in the middle of the keypad always has a little dot on it.
Now, for sighted people, the screen is the thing that they're going to use. It'll tell them whether they're going to top up their mobile phone or ask for £10, £20, £5 cash, whatever it might be. What about accessing those and instructions to do that kind of basic everyday stuff, finding those buttons? Is that easy to do?
Well, some people say it's very easy, and other people say they find it a bit confusing. So it's down to how good are you generally using these sort of telephone-based facilities. It's a bit like using a telephone banking service. It's press 1 for this, 2 for that, 3 for that. That's how it works. So you're not using the screen. You're using a much more audio way of working. So you'll plug your card in, and it'll say the keypad is here, to the left of where your hand is, and it gives you instructions on where things are, and it'll say press 1 for cash, 2 for balance, that kind of thing. It varies depending on the machine, but it will say which button to press for which option, and then when you need to type in your PIN number, it will say, please type in PIN number now, and then you press the keys, and it will tell you if you need to press enter, and if it's automatic sometimes. It varies on the machine, but it will tell you, and you don't use the screen. That's the key thing. Or very often you don't use those buttons to the left of the screen and the right of the screen. You'll just use the keypad.
Do you feel there are any security issues that you think about? You know, do you choose which machines you feel more comfortable using, where they're located perhaps, bearing in mind one is often talking about withdrawing money?
Yes. Personal security is something, especially in towns and cities, many of us are thinking about all the time. I've used cash machines as a completely blind person for years now. And I do have some familiar machines I use at the railway station, the bus station, and on my way to work. And I never feel uncomfortable using those machines, but I am careful. You know, I don't waggle my money around. And I do what I used to do when I was sighted. I listen around, and if there's sort of loud noises or people causing trouble around the area, I don't get the cash out. I think it's essentially the same for anyone. The thing about security is you just need to think about what you're doing. Many people will just use the machines inside the branch, if the branch is open and if there is a branch there, of course. And I do that quite often in preference because the machines are cleaner and you can use them privately and you can take a little bit more time. I never need the staff, and the great thing is I don't have to queue up at the counter, so I can just withdraw my money from the cash machine. It's always much quicker. I could be in and out sometimes in a minute, and I can get my cash without having to queue. And I'm used to doing that now, but at first I was a bit uncertain about it. But I think with everything, you get used to doing it, and you know, we're all grown-ups, we can all make our own decisions. If it's uncomfortable, don't do it, and if you feel comfortable or if you think you're reasonably safe to do it, just make your decision and try it out. And then once you're used to using it, then the world's your oyster from the point of view of being in control, of getting your own money out, changing your PIN number, topping up your mobile phone if it's got that facility, and there's some other services on cash machines now as well.
Now, there are quite a few ATM locating websites, but the one run by Link, which oversees the UK's cash dispensing machines, can be found at www.link.co.uk/consumers/locator. It's also available as a smart mobile phone app. However, this service will not tell you whether a particular ATM has built-in speech feedback for vision-impaired customers.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Well, let's find out what's happening in RNIB over in Northern Ireland. Una Mulgrew is the community facilitator there and joins me now to tell us all about some of their upcoming events.
Hello, this is Una Mulgrew from Connect NI, letting you know about a few things that are going on up in the Derry, Londonderry area. Firstly, on a Tuesday and a Thursday at 11 a.m, there's walking groups that start just outside the Embassy building on the Strand Road. It's just for a bit of a walk and a chat with each other. On a Thursday from 10 to 12, Brian will be there for drop-in. This is for anybody who would like to get any information, tell a story, or ask him some advice. If Brian isn't able to help you, he will be able to redirect you to someone who will. On a Wednesday at 1:30, there's a knit and natter gathering. More people, the merrier. And again, this is just for a bit of a chat and to meet new people if you haven't been there already. Thanks very much. For any more information, please telephone our Derry office on a Thursday morning between 10 and 12. The telephone number is 02871 366060. Thank you.
Thank you, Una.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Right, time now to meet Dave Myers. He's one of the Hairy Bikers. You might know him on that show. Aside all the fun and games that they have, one thing that Dave wanted to tell us about was getting your eyes tested. Very important, of course. It was a big message from last week's National Eye Health Week. Well, today, Dave Myers from the programme Hairy Bikers tells us, and in particular Robert Kirkwood, why getting his eyes tested was so important to him.
I've had worn glasses since I was 8 years old, and, you know, I'm well into that habit of getting my eyes tested every couple of years, and since I started the Hairy Bikers with my crash helmets and the damage to my specs, it's become like an annual occurrence, really. I go for some specs. The optician, You know, I had that test where they blow some air into your eye to test for pressure, and it came back as, you know, potentially having a problem. And I just said, oh, no, it's all right, I've just got a hangover. And the optician, who was a lot smarter than I was, said, no, I think you better go get this checked out. And I had the field vision test, and there was like signs of glaucoma that were showing up there. So basically, for 7 years, all I have to do is I take eye drops every night to reduce the pressure, and it stopped the glaucoma from developing any further. So, you know, eyesight, and as I'm sure your listeners know better than anybody, is so, so precious. And the message I'm trying to get out there, just trying to encourage more people to go to their opticians to make sure that they've got healthy eyes, because the optician can do far more than just prescribe glasses. And with 30 million people in Britain entitled to free eye tests, you know, we should use it. We need to look after our eyes, you know, more and more than we ever have done, especially as we've got an older population. And it'd be so nice to be able to keep your eyes in good nick so you can have a wonderful old age.
Looking after your eyesight must be very important because, let's face it, you couldn't ride your bike if you couldn't see.
No, I mean, going back, you know, since I was a child, eyesight's been so important. I did a degree in fine art, you know, and I trained as a painter, and I worked for 23 years as a makeup artist in films, doing special effects and prosthetics, you know, very, very fine work. And just last week, I did a charity motorbike ride across the Rockies and Washington State with Si, and some of the things that we saw on the bikes, you know, it would have been such a tragedy to give that up. And I think as well, you know, we are an ageing population, and there's something like 1.5 million people now who are 65 and are still working full-time through choice, not necessity. And, you know, in another kind of few years, there's going to be nearly 2 million people working. But in order to give yourself the choice to work or not, you need to have good eyesight. So again, you know, for the quality of your life, as you get older, it's so important to go and get your eyes checked. 50% of people get the boiler checked every year, and yet 25% of people, they don't get their eyes tested at all.
More people get their boiler tested than their eyes. It is ridiculous, isn't it? And that's true, because we've all got one of those deals, you know, one of those contracts where you get people out and they come and look at your boiler and say, it's going to cost you loads of money. And you're like, ugh. Yeah, we've all been there. Well, it's kind of similar with the opticians, but the difference is we don't get the contract. Well, do you know, it's so important that you get your eyes checked. Every 2 years, go get it done. And, you know, even if they come out and say, everything's great, everything's wonderful, fine. But get it done. Right, that's it for the show today. Back tomorrow. Tomorrow's Connect conversation, just to let you know, is going to be all about audio description. Yeah, I'm going to get a bit ranty tomorrow. Again. Yes, again. So join me for that. We'll get into the conversation with Sean Preece and Alan Russell today. Tomorrow, I should say, on The Daily Connect. Live from 10 a.m. till 12 on Freeview Channel 7:30. Also available as a podcast just after 5 o'clock. See you tomorrow. The Daily Connect Podcast.